Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com, for faith, fellowship, and love. CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health-sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
Gabriel.
Good evening, my fellow truth seekers, and welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. We are broadcasting live here at the WCAP studios at 980 a.m., which is live streamed through the internet and the WCAP website, as well as tunein.com. And then it is podcast throughout the internet on Archive, Podbeam, Breadbox Media, iTunes, iHeart, and other media outlets. Well, glad you could join us, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, we go beneath the surface on the 15-year anniversary celebration of Beneath the Surface Television and Radio.
Woohoo! Woohoo!
And our topic this evening is going to be Mercy Without Justice, the Recipe for Disaster. And as you may have guessed, speaking of guests, my guests tonight are my three regular rotating guests all here at the same time.
Hello.
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 We didn't rehearse that.
Apparently not.
I didn't know that was coming. Right. And I was late, so.
Well,
we'll get it right eventually.
Yeah, Cindy, my mic, I'm not hearing that well, and Kance, I'm hearing a little too loud. Other than that,
that's just my projection. That's the way
that's just the way I project.
Just can't say something, so we go.
I'm stentorian.
Again.
Stentorian.
Yeah.
I'm loud.
I don't know what's wrong with that mic.
Means loud.
Yeah, I can't even do it from here. It's not, the volume doesn't go up and down from this board.
Wow.
For some reason.
You know what it is?
Would you be a stentorian?
I don't, as a matter of fact.
I would be that. It's because I don't have headphones. The volume is compensating.
No, you've got to go at least 4 inches. Yeah.
You want me to lay
perfect.
Back a little bit?
Yes.
Is that
yeah.
good?
Far that's better.
Is that,
that's better.
That's too far
back.
Yeah. Bob says it's too far back.
Another inch and you're perfect.
We're experiencing technical difficulties.
Fabulous.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Now I just can't
there
move
they
for
are.
The whole show.
From left to right on your radio, Mr. Bob LeBlanc.
Hey there.
Mr. Kent Niebuhr.
I think I've already been introduced.
And Mr. John Tudoris.
Hey, Paul. Hey, he's doing me, doing
how
me.
How you doing?
Yes, John, you were just doing Bob, doing John. Or no, you were doing Bob, doing
John, doing
John,
me.
Doing Bob. Yes.
Well,
but anyway, it came out okay.
When Bob does me doing Bob.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Hey, Paul.
All right.
I'm caught in the crossfire. I don't have anything to do with what they're talking about right now.
Now, behind the glasses are, as usual, our producer Cindy. And our topic for this evening, again, is Mercy Without Justice, the Recipe for Disaster. Before we get beneath the surface on that good stuff, important stuff, I just want to, again, mention the fact that we are all here tonight. And usually when the four of us are here, it's some kind of celebration. We're celebrating. We have been here at WCAP Radio doing BTS Radio since February of 2013. That makes 5 years. But that was just an extension of Beneath the Surface Television, which we did in Burlington Cable Access Television since 2003.
We were just kids.
So from 2003, we're talking this summer was 15 years of Beneath the Surface. Congratulations, because you three were with me since the beginning.
That's hard to believe.
Almost.
15 years.
Almost, yeah.
I remember doing a show with Bob in the beginning. It was about Christmas.
We did a Christmas show.
We
that's
did a Christmas
right.
show
we did
together.
A Christmas show together. Yeah. Yes.
And the line you came up with was, we see all these bumper stickers that say keep Christ in Christmas, and you said, how about keeping the Mass in Christmas? Why aren't people going to Mass for Christmas?
I don't even remember that.
It made an impression, Bob. Made me go to Mass.
Christmas and Easter.
Or Ash Wednesday.
Oh yes, you right? Got to get your bling.
Yeah. Right. Got to get your ashes. So I've heard there's A and P Catholics who are ashes and palms, and C and E Catholics who are Christmas
and Easter.
You're
again. You're too close to the mic.
Sorry.
Now you're too far.
All right. Well, sorry about that, too.
All right. Fabulous.
I don't have headphones tonight because I showed up late. That's
That's what happens. You got to get here on time. I was saying, like I was telling you folks, my wife was saying, well, do they usually get here on time? And I said, well, John, Kent is always late.
Oh,
Bob is always early, and John is usually just right, just like the three little pigs.
We're sitting in the wrong order, right. Then. We ought to be sitting in the other seats, then.
Well, anyway, thank you, all three of you, for being a part of Beneath the Surface television and then now radio and podcasting for the past 15 years. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you. I know that you've been here from the beginning, too.
Well, especially me.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to get technical, you guys really weren't there from the beginning.
We're just blow-ins. Yeah. We're late arrivals.
We came in later. In fact,
yeah.
Your show started before I returned back to the church.
No, it didn't.
Yes.
Oh, it's 2003, you're right.
Wait, what, 2003?
Yeah.
I was just a newbie in the Catholic church.
Of 2003.
But I was baptized in 98. So, yeah, I was, what did you say, 03?
03.
Five years ago.
So were you a toddler then?
No, I wasn't a toddler.
Actually,
I'm an adult convert.
The first show.
No, I mean like a toddler in the...
You know. A toddler in the faith, yes. I was toddling around the...
John, you got to get close to your mic.
What?
Yeah. So, I remember, Kent, the first show that you came on Beneath the Surface, first of all, your head was shaved. You were like a skinhead.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, what do you say? When you say I'm like a skinhead, you're just talking about my haircut?
Just your head. Nothing else. Nothing else.
Inside or outside?
No. Totally inside. You were totally cool.
Okay.
And that's the first time I met you because we had a mutual friend, Bernie.
Yeah, right.
And Loretta. And
actually, I think Lori Glasser was the mutual friend who facilitated the...
Okay. She called. She said, I've got a friend who would be great to do the show. And we knew our friends, but we didn't know each other. So you came on my show for that first time, and we talked about your miraculous conversion experience.
Yeah, that's right. That's going back a ways now. 20 years. This is my 20th anniversary as a Catholic.
Congratulations.
I should get a tattoo for that
numbers.
Or something.
You should. But unfortunately, you have a Yankee shirt on, so it sort of dampens it a little bit.
It's how I stay humble.
We want as many converts as possible, but I always thought that Yankees fans didn't get to heaven.
This is the thing. Every time the Pope comes to the United States...
He goes to Boston.
He says Mass. Where? Yeah. At Yankees. Gathers the faithful at Yankee Stadium.
That's because they need it the most.
Is that what...
Yeah.
That?
Yeah.
So I was sent into Red Sox Nation to evangelize. That's why I'm here.
And now they're 10 games behind the Red Sox, so you've done a good job.
Nine and a half, actually.
I don't know about that.
Much.
It was 10 and a half yesterday, or the day before. But anyway, enough about baseball.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, are you ready to get beneath the surface or not?
Yes.
Yeah, because we've been just superficial so far.
Yeah, we have. All right, so the topic tonight is mercy without justice, the recipe for disaster. Our phone number, if you folks listening want to get involved in our conversation, if you're listening live, it's 978-454-4980. That's 978-454-4980. Or you simply can write down your thoughts at facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. All one word.
Can I call in?
You don't have to call in.
All right. The video that your lovely bride is shooting right now, is that live streaming video?
No.
Or is that going to be uploaded later?
No, that will be uploaded.
Is she allowed to speak because she's just shaking her head over there?
Well, no. She's. I told her at the end of the show, I want to interview her, but she said, no way.
So
happening.
If she speaks on the air, she needs to be on the payroll? Is that how it works?
That's how it works, yeah. Yeah, exactly. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. I don't know if you, Beneath the Surface regulars will know whose voice is who, But from now on, when you guys talk, I will just remind them who's talking. So when I say your name, don't think that I want your attention.
I think we
should
put on
I'm just telling
name
them
tags.
Who you are.
We should wear name tags.
I don't know
then.
If that'll work on radio name tag. Yeah.
It's
a start.
Audio name
yeah.
Tag?
Can we have audio name? That's
it
what Paul's describing. He
like,
is
like
the audio
whisper.
Name tag.
Yeah, I am the audio name tag,
you're
John.
You're now listening to Kent.
Kent here.
And now
I think
Bob.
John
Kent,
should be the audio
the
name tag. I
yes,
just like
but,
that voice.
But John has to... He can't just do it in that voice, though. He has to do it in all different voices. John is a man
oh, really?
Of a thousand voices.
And
as a matter of fact,
Bob.
As a matter of fact, I think I just heard just saw a former president walk into the studio, didn't I?
That's right.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Let's kick him out.
Yeah, 978-454-4098 is our phone number. All right, so justice, mercy, they're the two sides of love. They're the two sides of God. The church, the world, human nature, fallen as it is, seems to always vacillate between too much justice, not enough mercy, and too much mercy, not enough justice. The pendulum swings back and forth. One could make the large generalization that within the church, pre-Vatican II, seemed to be a little too much justice without enough mercy. Post-Vatican II, too much mercy without enough justice. Gentlemen, mercy without justice, is it the recipe for disaster?
Should we go like, yes,
yes,
yes, yes.
Elaborate.
For one is if you don't have a proper balance between the two, inevitably you go into error.
Yes.
All virtues are connected to each other, and if they're not exercised in proper order, you're toast.
Well, we see yeah. symptoms of that. People are, I think, justifiably angry right now, and that anger is at root or showing that desire for justice. We're not seeing the justice right now, and everybody is crying out. Well, in the past, they were crying out for mercy without really going after the justice aspect of this.
Now, Bob, on the rest of you, do you see truth and justice as sort of related and mercy and compassion as related?
Can we
say that these are like the masculine and the feminine sides or dimensions of love and relationship?
Yeah, the thing is that we want the whole thing.
Yes.
We want the truth and justice, and we want the mercy and compassion.
And would you say, if you don't mind me going beneath the surface, that conservatism usually focuses a little more on justice than mercy, and liberalism focuses usually a little more on mercy than justice?
I'd say so.
And liberalism is a little more feminine in its outlook and approach, and conservatism perhaps a little more masculine.
I think you can make that argument.
Okay.
But you go back to the book of Genesis, and what you have is God creating humanity, male and female. So just like too much justice, not enough mercy is going to blow things up, and too much mercy, not enough justice is going to blow things up. It's the union of the two. And,
yeah.
you know, I'm going to just quibble with John for a second that he
Good.
Said a balance. And I don't know if balance is quite the right word. I think it's I think of it more of as a union. So maybe.
Well, they would be together. In fact, in order to have that right balance, you need the proper union.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if someone is to authentically appeal to mercy, there's also a component of restitution that comes in there. You know, so if someone's familiar with the sacrament of confession, for example, you go in, you confess your sins, but that doesn't mean you get off scot-free. There's still the consequence of the sinful actions themselves.
And that's where justice meets mercy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you seek mercy, and you have to pay restitution.
That's correct.
Well, I think we could just say flat out that there really is no authentic mercy without justice.
Right.
You have to say there is wrongdoing in the first place in order for mercy to be enacted.
Right. It doesn't even have any context. What does mercy mean without first understanding what justice is? Right?
You know, one of the things that you commonly see is if someone does something wrong and they apologize for it, very often the response from the offended person is, that's okay. And
right.
Like,
right.
As a parent, I always tell my kids, don't say that's okay, because it's not okay.
Very good.
You want to say, I forgive you.
Yes.
You don't want to say that's okay. What they did is wrong.
Truth in language is extremely important because it reflects true justice.
Yeah.
Right? It's not okay. That
right.
would be a lie.
Right.
That what you just did is
or
okay.
Or at least an error. Maybe yeah. not a lie, but an error.
Yeah. Now, I think what they probably mean, and they're not saying it properly, is now it's okay that you said that. Things will be okay.
Sure. Right.
Yeah, but the act itself is not okay.
Yeah, it's just a little vague. So yeah. you want to specify that what you did was wrong.
Yeah.
But we're okay now, especially since you apologized, and I forgive you. I tell my kids, say, don't say that's okay. Say, I forgive you, but don't ever do it again.
Yeah, yeah. And it reminds me of Jesus with the woman caught in adultery, right?
Right.
He didn't... well, he said...
Neither do I accuse
you. Are they condemning you? And the woman said, no, sir. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. But go and sin no more. That's huge.
Yeah, right.
I mean, neither do I condemn you is the mercy. Yeah. Go and sin no more is the justice.
He didn't say, that's okay.
Yeah, he'd never said that's okay.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
Am I hearing a little music in the headphones?
And it's different.
Yeah. The music is different.
Is it
yes.
a song about mercy?
Yes.
Or justice?
And the video doesn't pick up the music because only the headphones do and you can't hear
I got
the music.
Nothing.
Because,
I'm,
yeah. Cindy, is that music? I barely
feel like
hear
I'm
it.
I'm in timeout.
Ah, there it is. Now yeah,
I did. I did hear the bells or the yeah, triangle.
Yes,
yeah.
You heard
little
the bells
triangle.
On
Christmas. Yes,
oh, all right.
Triangle.
Well, we need to take a quick break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface Radio. Paul Morano here with my guests, Bob LeBlanc, Kent Niebuhr, and John Tudorus. We're celebrating 15 years of Beneath the Surface, both television and radio. And our topic this evening is Mercy Without Justice, the Recipe for Disaster. Don't go anywhere. We want your phone calls. We want anything that you want to give us. And
what's the phone number?
978-454-4980 is the phone number. So write that down. We'll be back just in a moment. Thanks for joining us tonight on Beneath the Surface Radio. Here, the lovely WCAP studios. Our 15th anniversary for Beneath the Surface television and radio. There I go. My guests tonight are Mr. Bob LeBlanc, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, and Mr. John Tudorus. All insightful. Wise human beings.
I've been doing this show for 15 years and I don't have a fan club.
You don't have a fan club yet?
Not one. I tried to start it, but not one member. There's not even one.
I'm your fan.
All right. Did you have a fan club? I'll join.
I have a president of a fan club.
Oh, you do? That's right.
She
said that she was, right?
She nominated herself yeah. president and said, I'm the president
wow.
of your fan club.
All right. He's way ahead of us, John. He's way ahead of us.
Are the initials TM?
Yes, they are.
Yes. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. If you want to call up, get in touch with us. There you have it. All right. So, should we define our terms first, and then we'll get into some secular and religious scandals?
Sure.
All right. So, what is justice? And then we'll talk about what is mercy.
Justice, right-orderedness.
Right-orderedness. I like that.
Giving a person what is they are due.
Okay, that's certainly a part of it. Giving to those. That is the virtue of justice, how we act justly.
Bob stole my answer.
Sorry, there's
something unjust about stealing, isn't there?
Yes, that's what I want to call out right
all right
now.
Yeah. So in his perfect answer, it was an unjust answer. Okay.
So, okay, let me put a spin on it.
Yes.
You said, you identified what he said as the virtue of justice, so I'll say it is the giving of
justice.
I'll make it more abstract.
Okay. Right. So justice is, another word for justice is rightness, or what's the fancy, or the Old English might call righteousness, right?
Ooh.
Rightness is justice. Right-orderedness. And, of course, regarding us, it relates to living according to the natural order, according to reason, according to what is. So that's justice. We all strive for justice. Justice is simply that which emanates from God himself that gives reason to the entire cosmos, the entire universe. What is mercy?
Mercy, I think, in terms of a synonym, I think of forgiving or forgiveness, right?
You do.
Yeah.
Well, that's a way to...
Or compassion.
Yeah. That's a way to act out mercy.
Of broken justice.
Ooh. I like repairing a broken justice.
Broken justice.
Okay, yeah. That's mercy. Isn't that restitution or retribution?
That's included.
I think of it more of as restoring.
Restoring.
Restoration, right? If you have mercy on someone, you're saying, okay, you're fallen, but let's get back to where you ought to be.
But in that offer of bringing the person back
justice
up...
Justice has to be served.
Well, not only that, what I was going to say is the person doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, that's implied.
Implied in the notion of mercy.
It's a gift. Mercy is a gift.
It's a gift that's not deserved.
Right.
Let me just add that mercy is restoring that relationship with whomever. In particular, we're talking about God. And I think of the story of the prodigal son. The prodigal son realizes and repents and says, I'm going to go back to my father. And say, I'm not deserving. And the father from far away looks on and just says, welcome back, son.
Now, that's a wonderful story of mercy.
Yes.
Yeah, the son deserved none of that.
Right.
None of that, if you listen to that story.
And at the same time, I would also say that even though the son did not deserve it, he has a right to the mercy, which is also a certain aspect of justice.
That's a very interesting point.
And that, I would say, stems from the nature of God himself. That God...
Who is justice and mercy.
That's correct. He has this perfect union in his being of all the things that we would talk about as virtues. Love, justice, mercy. But we only understand them analogously to this perfect expression, this perfect essence of these virtues within God.
Just to clarify, in one sense, you're saying we don't deserve mercy.
Yes.
We deserve what we get, the consequences of our actions.
Yes.
On the other hand, we have a right to mercy.
Yes.
Because of the nature of God himself.
Right. We don't earn mercy, but because of the nature of God and our nature, we have a right to it.
So then, as reflections of God, we must seek and work for justice and also offer mercy.
Right. I almost wanted to say, as John was speaking, I was full of love, which he always does that to me. You know you do that to me, right, John?
Does that mean you seek both justice and offer mercy?
So if you take justice and mercy in their proper union, what you describing is love.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And you cannot have love without either one of those in a right balance.
Right.
It's impossible.
Which is interesting because in order to be merciful, you have to sacrifice something of yourself. You have to be willing to be wounded and then accept the offending party.
Well, you have to accept your woundedness. How's that?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you have to be willing. In order to love, you have to be willing to be wounded. At least to risk it, right?
Yes.
And then, once the party wounds you, in order to exercise your love, you have to forgive them. You have to be merciful and just, but receive them back into your love.
Yeah, and there you have any marriage, whether it be marriage between Christ and his church, God and his people, or a man and a woman, you seek the justice that is the right orderedness of marriage. Right?
Right.
And yet, when people slip up, when they make mistakes or commit sins, we seek to forgive and to offer mercy.
Well, we ought to.
Yeah.
We ought to seek to forgive.
Yeah. All right. So then we have a somewhat of a definition of what justice and mercy are, and we know that the proper balance of both is love. And if you have too much of one and not the other, you have an imbalanced love, which is a non-love. You have enabling, if you have mercy without justice, and you have harshness, if you have justice without mercy. So both are necessary. Now, you want to get into what has been happening in the world today to apply this notion of you can't have mercy without justice. And there are a couple of things going on in the world that are you know, all over the newspapers, all over the headlines, and that is a couple of scandals, both, of course, relating to sex. Usually scandals are about sex or money. The scandal in the church and the scandal in the world that has created the Me Too movements. Which one do you want to go with first?
What presses in my mind is the church scandal.
Okay.
We did a show about it 2 weeks ago, and I'm still...
Bob LeBlanc.
I'm still thinking about this. You know, you've brought it up many times, is that the one thing that that a lot of preachers in the Catholic Church these days, and probably a lot of mainstream Protestantism, is this kind of pastoralism.
Yes. Over pastoralism.
Yes, there's this sacrificing the truth in order to be nice and comfortable,
yes,
with everybody, make everybody feel kind of comfortable with who they are, feel accepted.
You're giving a good example of mercy without justice, aren't you?
Yeah, mercy without justice, yes.
Yeah.
That's why we have the confessional. You know,
yes,
the guilt part is an absolutely necessary part of the equation. And I was going to say this before, but I think it's appropriate to say it now. In my understanding of at least my own repentance is that I've sinned, and boy, I just cannot be ever forgiven for this.
In a certain natural
sense,
yeah,
is like that I've done something really wrong. And nothing repairs this, you know.
Probably think, nor should I be forgiven for this.
Yeah, there's a really deep sense of guilt.
Okay.
And I think that is a very good, healthy thing, because I've done something wrong. I realize the magnitude of that error, that wrongness, and now it comes in the church with the confession, and you say, you go there and you say, I'm so sorry for these sins, and you hear those words, I absolve you, and that's,
yes,
when the mercy comes.
And I would say, before I get to John's thought, I would say that you want to understand properly what you just said, because what you said is that you appreciate the magnitude of the sin. You feel like you almost shouldn't be forgiven because of it.
Right.
However, you don't want to go overboard with that.
Right. Absolutely.
Because you know, as a Catholic Christian, that God is willing and waiting to forgive you.
He is waiting with open arms to forgive me.
Despite that feeling of magnitude, which is also healthy, is the recognition, that the knowledge that God's mercy is infinite.
Right.
And that in the sacrament of confession, he waits there for you.
There is no sin so large that God
you.
Can't forgive.
Amen. And no multiples of sins either.
Right. Absolutely.
The sacrifice of Christ on the cross is an infinite, merciful giving to humanity.
Except
yes.
for final impenitence.
Right.
Why don't you talk about what that means?
Well, it just means that at the end, where we just don't trust in God's mercy.
We don't ask for it. We don't seek it.
We don't seek it. We don't ask for it. God in his magnanimity. And, of course, it's actually can be very deceptive, too, because sometimes people may not be consciously thinking that I'm refusing God's mercy, but by their actions and the way they live their life, they can de facto be in that state. I mean, hell doesn't start just when you get to hell. Hell starts here. Heaven starts here, and it starts with the way we're living our life. And there's this natural projection. Virtues bring us closer to heaven. They're not heaven. They're not happiness under themselves. But boy, do they help you get there. This disposition towards doing things rightly ordered in order that we might arrive at our destination. I mean, it's like a map, right? If you have a map, you know, you follow the yellow brick road, where does that lead? It leads to Oz. Well, that's analogous to heaven, right? Let's replace that with heaven. You get off the road, and you get the trees throwing apples at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's kind of
hellish. Except God isn't a wizard. He's actually the real thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And, of course, in heaven, you know, that's where you will have direct knowledge of the divine essence, and there won't be any separation the way we have it now. I mean, well, we won't have the full capacity to know God in that way. But then also, too, getting back to that point, I mean, the final impenitence, I mean, if we are living not out of love of God, we don't at least have that in the mind. We don't always have the capacity to think that way all the time, but the projection of our of what we do, right? You know, and the, what people don't realize, too, is that also what we don't do, we can actually be held responsible for, right? If we should know and can know and that we don't know because we're not willing to follow that little rabbit down the hole, we want to be willfully ignorant.
Yeah.
That's huge.
There's a difference in moral theology between invincible ignorance and voluntary ignorance. And you speak here of voluntary ignorance.
On my test, it was invincible ignorance. And invincible. If I didn't say invincible, you bet.
That's right.
Invincible, voluntary. The point is invincible that you can't keep yourself deliberately ignorant of something because you don't want to know, because that won't be an excuse when you commit the sin.
I just want to say that a simplified way, or at least the way that I always wrap my head around this final impenitence, is really when Christ says the only unforgivable sin is the sin against the Holy Spirit. So the imagery for me is God is pouring out himself on sinners, pouring himself out, and what impenitence is like throwing up an umbrella or like sheltering yourself from God pouring himself out on you.
Yeah.
So the only unforgivable sin is not letting God forgive your sin.
Yeah.
Not saying, okay, God, forgive me. Right?
Please forgive
me.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's being that's contrite. The only way you can't be forgiven, because God is a gentleman. He knocks on the door, but he doesn't
force you
in. Right.
Because he wouldn't respect our personhood the way he created us if he did.
He gave us a choice, and we have to exercise that choice for him or against him.
Bob, I'm hearing a lot of thought coming out of your head. Just wanting to
articulate
it for me.
Oh, really? Well, we started with the question of you know, is this damaging? Is this mercy without justice creating damage? And I think we're witnessing that. I just want to just point that out explicitly, that we're seeing the effects of either not acknowledging the sin, which is one way to go wrong on justice, not acknowledging, hiding it, acting like the traditional ostrich, you know, poking its head in the sand and saying, there's nothing there to see, folks, you know?
Yes, and pretending and creating a narrative that's, that ignores the pink elephant in the living room. Yeah.
Right. And so I think you said thankfully, and I agree with you. Thankfully, this stuff is being exposed so we can have an actual purging.
And you're speaking of the scandal within the church now.
Right.
Yeah. In one sense, it's an exciting time because stuff, you know, we live in a fallen world, and the church has certainly been touched by the fact that we live in a fallen world. The church is not given the gift of impeccability, only infallibility. And so that's the church is a bunch of sinners, of course, until Christ comes back again. So a lot of dust has been, you could say, stored underneath the carpet for...
Swept under the rug.
Swept under the rug for a few decades now, it seems.
Right.
At least it
for
feels.
For a long, long time. I mean, it's the dirt is there. We don't see it. And then all of a sudden, you know, the mound of dust is coming out.
And what's exciting to me is that we're getting hints now that we're finally going to lift up that rug and sweep that dirt and cleanse it and polish it.
What are the
and
hints?
Make it all better.
What are the hints that that's coming? Because
Well, the hints are that things are coming, seem to be coming to a head and out to light about these improper behaviors.
Yeah, but I don't know if we're getting that from the church hierarchy, that there's going to be a purging, that there's going to be a cleansing.
No, it's coming coming from without.
Exactly.
It's coming from the laity.
Yeah.
I hear it from the laity a lot.
It's coming from
So that's even better, because if it comes from the bottom up, then the Holy Spirit is moving the whole church, finally the hierarchy will have to do something about it, and they, in good conscience, I think they eventually will.
That's what has to happen. They have to be on board with it, because it's been a very top-down thing imposed upon the church through...
Well, we'll talk about that after the break.
Okay.
All right? 978-454-4980 is our phone number. I don't think laity have been angels either.
No, definitely not.
In the past few decades.
Yeah.
978-454-4980. You're listening to Beneath the Surface Radio. Thanks for listening. We're here until 11 p.m. if you're listening live. My guests are Bob, Kent, and John Palmerano. and you are all going to be back right after this break. Don't go away.
Welcome to my world.
Welcome to my world.
Feels so pleasant in here.
The video can't see hear this, but we're listening to something over the headphones. And what is it? Welcome to my world? Welcome to my world. By who? Who does that song?
That was the Jim Reeves version.
Jim Reeves? Okay. 97845. Cindy is surprising us tonight with all these new songs, but of course the video folks can't hear them, so it doesn't make any difference. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. I'm finally hearing myself clearly through the headphones, which is always a good thing. Gentlemen.
Where?
My guests tonight, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, and Mr. John Tudors, they're all here at the same time because we are celebrating the 15th anniversary of Beneath the Surface on both television and radio. And they, these three folks, have been with me almost the whole time. Say maybe 12 years?
At least, yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
About 12 of the 15? Maybe 13 of the 15?
I think Bob did a TV show a little before I did, and then I hopped in on a few.
Yeah? Okay.
In Burlington. Yeah. When did we do that first?
It was around 2006, I think I remember doing a show.
Okay.
About that early, yeah.
All right. So we have had a lot of topics that we've gone beneath the surface on.
Yeah.
Gosh.
We had a few good ones. There was
a lot of good ones.
Mary was really good.
Yes.
The TV, that one. I remember the guys working the game. He's like, damn, it's a good show, man.
There's a lot of really good topics. Tonight, on Beneath the Surface, we are talking about the notion of mercy without justice, the recipe for disaster. In one sentence or less, why is it disastrous, mercy without justice?
It's permissiveness.
Okay.
In other words,
it enables.
It enables bad behavior. It doesn't check any kind of bad behavior.
And it's not good for the people who you have false mercy upon.
Exactly. It's like a drug addict. If you just keep giving them drugs or just not intervening or something like that, and they're just going to continue to spiral downward.
So we are hoping that in the church and in the world, in the scandals that we find in both places, that we won't just fall to this notion of let's have mercy on these people and forgive them, which of course is very important, but without calling them out and cleansing things from that need to be taken care of.
Yeah, I think for a long time justice has been muzzled.
Yeah.
And so now we need to unleash justice, not at the expense of mercy, but we need that union of the two that we should have had all along. And as you say, maybe we can generalize and say before the 60s, before Vatican II, there was a little too much justice and not enough mercy, or maybe a lot too much. And then the pendulum swung the other way. I think now we finally need to get it right.
To the point where truth has become the new hate word. I like to, I created a word for myself called verophobia. I think a lot of people suffer from it today.
Yeah.
That there's a fear of truth. The college scene, trigger, what do they call them? Trigger safe zones and
trigger warnings.
Trigger warnings and all of this stuff that people, they just can't hear.
What's a trigger warning? I'm sorry, I'm out of the loop. What's a trigger warning?
You just said one.
It's basically.
I'm offended.
if you say something that's that people might be offended about, you have to warn them.
I'm offended. I'm offended.
I mean, all of this nonsense that's going on today on college campuses, but it's going on throughout all of society, that we fear truth today because so many people aren't saying it, aren't speaking it, and we are accepting a false narrative that gives everybody mercy without justice, and it's a false mercy. It's an enabling. And scandal, of course, is going to, it will have to erupt when you live this way, Bob.
It sure does. I think we see it with the Harvey Weinstein sort of thing that erupted, the Me Too.
The Me Too movement.
Yeah. Well, We certainly had the era of sexual permissiveness starting in the 1960s.
Yep.
And I think it really made victims out of women. The fact that you really didn't give women a good reason to be able to say no anymore, because it was expected that you would get what you want.
So in other words, throughout the centuries, since the dawn of mankind, men, because of their disordered desires of the paternal urge, seek to take advantage of women. Women have always said, have been the gatekeepers of their own chastity.
Right.
And they were, of course, the veto power, and they said no because they had natural and supernatural excuses to say no. But you're saying the birth control pill has taken away that natural excuse to say no. Is that
right,
what you're saying?
Right. I know what it is to be a guy. I think
yes.
I know what it is to be a sinful guy. And I know in the past, you know, you could say something like, "Hey, baby, I love you.
Yeah.
I love you with my whole heart, and I'll never get rid of you or do anything to hurt you or
right.
anything like that."
Sure.
And mean that sincerely.
In the moment.
In the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then all of a sudden, you know, just like a child is with a toy that they were so interested in, was very new.
Yeah.
And something
shiny,
like that,
yeah.
very shiny. And then all of a sudden, you get bored or something
yeah.
like that. It doesn't have that shine anymore.
Eros and, without agape gets boring.
Yeah, and so you really hurt the woman. You made all these promises, and then you
yeah.
just decided, well, I don't feel like that anymore.
In a sense, it's indirect. You know, people are going to yell at me for this one. But in a very indirect way, it's a form of rape.
Yeah, I think one follows after the other. They calling the Me Too stuff, this is something well beyond
yeah.
Consent here. There's something closer to rape, even though maybe there wasn't a firm no that was said. There were definitely women who were in a position where they were taken advantage of.
Yeah, and sometimes it's difficult to know exactly where that line is.
But
it
used to be much clearer.
Well, it used to be a whole lot clearer.
And
as a society, we the line was at marriage.
Right. Yes, consent comes with a ring.
Yes, exactly. Consent literally is consent in front of family and friends, and in
God.
A religious setting, if you're religious, in front of God. That's where the
and
consent is.
Right?
Yeah.
Because what you're talking about, Bob, is having the best of intentions. What you're really getting at is permanence.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you say that I can tell you I love you and I can make this commitment, but I can take it away at any time.
Yes.
That's there was no commitment. If
no.
if you have the option of taking it away at any time,
if that option
there
is
never
there.
Was a commitment.
Morally, yes, that
right.
is correct.
Because you're committing to say that you're committing to something temporary isn't a commitment.
It's an oxymoron. You can't do that.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not that's
and that one,
the opposite
so,
of love.
So like you said, with artificial birth control
yes.
and with divorce, especially no-fault divorce, it just obliterated marriage, and it basically, I almost want to say, institutionalized this quasi-rape that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. The fornication culture really is indirectly a rape culture. And sometimes it's very difficult to know literally the difference between rape and non-rape.
Yeah.
Now, as we're seeing, as this Me Too movement is being played out. Well, with all of this abuse that has been going on in the secular world as well as the church, we see in this Me Too movement how both justice and mercy are violated.
Yeah.
Big time. Anybody want to elaborate on that?
Bob pointed to me. I was really just kind of had this blank thing.
No, I saw it in your eyes.
Guys
yeah.
have a nothing box.
Yeah.
I was right in that neutral spot right there.
Yeah, I could
and
tell
then,
you.
And you called
you,
me right out.
You were zoning out, but you heard everything I said, though.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And then I looked over, and then Bob pointed, and I was really on the spot.
Look, it's unjust, obviously, to abuse anybody.
Yeah.
Now, I will go further than that. It's unjust to abuse anybody, even if they consent to it.
Absolutely.
That's the problem today. Absolutely. They've gone halfway here.
Right.
They're recognizing abuse without consent, but they're not recognizing abuse with consent.
Right. I can't tell you how many times my kids will say, I'll say, don't do that to your sister. And they'll say, but she's laughing.
Yes.
That doesn't excuse it. It doesn't make it right.
Yes.
Here's the problem, Paul. Here's the real problem.
Where's the problem, Bob?
And you can see this. They say that pornography doesn't create any problems, but it really does. It really helps you objectify the other person. It's not love. You're treating the person. You're training yourself to treat the other person as an object, not as another person. There's no love there. Except maybe like you love apple pie or something like that. That's an object.
It's an object, yeah.
But
delicious.
Delicious. But it is not treating them as they should be treated, as a person.
You depersonalize somebody even in your mind or heart. And, of course, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount that when you lust after a woman, even if it's just with your heart, you're committing adultery in your heart. Very interesting. Very sobering words for our day, isn't it? Intentionally lusting after women, of course, is what pornography is all about.
Right. There can be no other object for pornography.
So in this sense, it is unjust to even look at, and of course, what the next step is act towards, women or anybody unjustly. And this is the virtue of justice that you were speaking about before.
Giving a person what they are due.
I would just add to all this, too, what's come to my mind is the lack of formation. There's a certain unjustness in the forming. For example, when you talked about how women were traditionally the gatekeepers, in a certain sense, they would hold men to a higher standard.
Yes.
And there's a certain deformation that's going on. Most women don't realize the power that they have simply by saying no.
Yeah.
They can hold men to a higher standard.
Well, because of the popularization of the birth control pill, they fear that saying no will just have their man go to somebody else.
Oh, sure. And there's a false virtue behind that, too, saying, well, you know, the responsible people, well, they use protection.
Right.
That's safe. And, of course, that's not safe at all because you're putting yourself in danger. Even if you don't have a child immediately at that point, it's a deformed valuation that you're promoting.
What does it protect? It doesn't protect from broken hearts. It doesn't protect from self-worth. It doesn't protect from enabling yourself to give yourself fully to your future spouse. It doesn't protect yourself from a lot of things.
That's right.
We also have to say here, I think you're absolutely right what you said, John, about women having the power to say no and how powerful that really is. But men have to rise to the occasion because, as you said, Paul, if a woman says no to me and I just move on to the next woman, all I'm doing is giving the woman a disincentive to say no.
Absolutely. No question about it. So men are just as much a problem in this as women
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Yes. So it's not like it starts with women and men will follow.
And by the way, the birth,
starting it also,
the birth control pill.
What a man should do is come at the woman with a ring. And not come at her without a ring and say, hey, you know, why don't you sleep with me? The man should come at her with a ring and say, marry me.
Yes.
And go from there.
Birth control was created by a man.
Yeah. Isn't that
ironic? Men, quote unquote, benefit, and I put it in quotes because they really don't.
Right.
But they think they benefit from being able to use women at their own whenever
they
desire. They
become less men.
What birth
control? And the results, they become less virtuous, become less manly.
Yeah.
They're unable to discipline themselves in a virtuous manner. They become, in a sense, they become wimps. And they think they're becoming more macho.
Right.
Well, the birth control pill is abuse in itself from a medical perspective.
Yes.
I think a year or two ago, there was a woman columnist in the UK who was complaining about men being wimps because they developed a birth control pill for men.
Yeah.
And it had certain side effects. And she was going, now, wait a second, guys. We've been suffering all along with possibility of stroke, with all these other things.
Heart attack, it's a class one.
Breast cancer. Yeah,
breast cancer.
Carcinogen.
And she's going, well, why won't men put up with it? Well, I remember years ago when Janet Smith had contraception, why not?
That tape, yeah.
That tape, and she mentioned the same very thing. You know, yeah. they developed, and I guess there was some sort of shrinkage in the testes, and they said, yeah. we're going to stop this male birth control pill now.
Anything that affects males doesn't fly, but if it affects females
Absolutely.
In a negative way, well, we can experiment with that.
That sort of truth needs to get out there, I think.
Yeah, women, 1058, like we still have 2 minutes, died, right? Or 4 women died.
Yes.
Men had a little shrinkage in their testes, and something like 4 women, 8 women died.
And they just reduced the dosage.
They just reduced the dosage.
And in reducing the dosage, it actually now acts as an abortive patient.
Right.
Because now it's when there is conception, the birth control pill makes the uterine lining impossible for the tiny human being, the tiny embryo, to attach to. And they flush out of the woman without them even knowing it.
So
there, wait a minute,
man,
there are a lot of abortions that have occurred today. This needs to get out that women don't even know about.
Instead of a man coming at a woman with a wedding ring, he comes at her with birth control of some form.
Exactly.
And says, here, now you don't have an excuse to say
And we all wonder why there is abuse and why there's scandal today.
Yeah.
There you have it.
And I would say, tying this back to the topic at hand, that it's unjust. What the pill does, it disrupts what should be rightly ordered, which is love.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com.